Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed in Radio DMG may or may not be the views and opinions of the DMGI's family of sites. All music used in this podcast is the property of whoever made it, and no copyright infringement is intended. God bless this albatross, and hold on tight for the awesome you're about to receive.
It's good to be the king.
And welcome to today's edition of Radio DMG. I am your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, and today is December 5th, 2011. There unfortunately is not a lot of newsity today, so instead of regaling you with, well, not a lot of newsity, I mean, there were sales in Japan, which we mentioned already, and 3DS did really well in Japan, and then there was a thing about, let's see, Richard Flam, the Nintendo of America's general counsel, in other words, one of their lawyer team, retired after 19 years. And I guess that's not really big news to everybody else, I guess. He was mostly known for going after people who pirated Pokemon cards. And then they had a the Nintendo 3DS was featured in a Justin Bieber, Mariah Carey video. Don't really feel like going into that. In fact, the only real news for today that I think is interesting and newsworthy is that it's Walt Disney's birthday. He would have been 110 if he were still alive. The world would be a better place. And, he was born December 5th in, let me check real quick. When was Walt Disney born again? He was born December 5th, 1901 in Hermosa, Chicago, Illinois, in the U.S. And he died at age 65 on December 15th, 1966 in Burbank, California, of lung cancer, and his body was cremated. So if anybody ever tells you that Walt Disney's frozen or something, smack them upside the head. Nobody really knows where that rumor came from. It's just really stupid. It's not true. Also, he wasn't anti-Semitic. I think you're talking about Henry Ford. Or, some of the other people in Hollywood. The whole anti-Semitic thing, or Walt Disney being cold as ice, or being frozen, had to do with him testifying at a Senate hearing during the McCarthy era. You see, he was accused of being a communist sympathizer and working with the unions at the time, because the majority of the unions in the United States are actually communist. There are traces of communism that have... I'll go into it sometime and give you the history of unions sometime on Holding the Bridge, but this is Radio DMG, so we're not going to go into that. In fact, we're just going to go ahead and introduce what our content is today. Today we've got an interview with Mary Elizabeth McGlynn, M-C-G-L-Y-N-N, my pronunciation is a little shot. But we have an interview with her today from Non-Descon. The audio's a little bit patchy. It's another group interview, but it's worth listening to. It's pretty good. And we'll have that today, and then an interview we did with several members of Harmony Gold. Now, the Harmony Gold interview has substantially better audio quality because the room where we were at Non-Descon had kind of a fan going in the background sometimes, but also there were a couple little things that you could do with some of the objects in the room that the people who worked for Harmony Gold... Well, we did a sound check, and the people at Harmony Gold said, "Hey, I bet we can make the sound better." And they went and we set it up in a way that the audio quality is the best audio quality out of all the interviews that we had over at Non-Descon. That's the one we have with the people at Harmony Gold. They're behind Robotech. And it's Pretty interesting. So we're going to have both of those, and that's actually the end of our non-DeskCon 2011 content. So I hope you've been enjoying the non-DeskCon content that we have, because this will be the last episode of that. So since we don't have any newsity, and I've got two pieces of content for you today, we're going to go ahead, and this might be one of our shorter episodes. So sit back, relax, and enjoy our feature presentations.
This is Philip Wesley with Radio DMG and
Little Local with the RJ Productions.
And we're here at NonDeskCon 2011 with
Mary Elizabeth McGlynn.
And let's get this party started. So, who are you and what do you do?
I don't know. I've been trying to figure that out for a long time. I am a voiceover actor, director, and I sing songs for different games and movies, and that's what I do.
Okay, my question, what is about anime that you think draws people into, like, what's this?
I think it's because it's really character-driven. It's not so much, you know, cute and funny and silly, which a lot of American animation is for little kids. It's something that's for an older demographic most of the time. And it's all serialized, which is most of it anyway, which is really kind of cool. So it's these long story arcs of happiness or betrayal or whatever it is. So it's really story-driven and it's character-driven. I mean, that's why I love it. Plus, there's lots of fighting and robots.
So what brought you into got you interested into working in animation and anime to begin with? Then what was your first one?
Okay, I was doing a lot of on-camera work, and I really wasn't happy doing on-camera work. It was a lot of waiting around and then rushing once you get on set. And I knew I was supposed to be in L.A., but I wasn't supposed to be doing that. And what got me into voiceover was I was shooting an episode of Xena Warrior Princess, and I was hurt on set. The horse I was being hanged on reared up and fell on top of me and dislocated my kneecap. And at the time, I was still sort of singing and dancing at a show up at Universal Studios, and I couldn't do that anymore. So a friend of mine recommended me to Zero Limit Productions, and I went in, and I think I did a bit part on something, I can't remember, but they needed to voice match this actress who left, and she was a show called El Hazard. And I played Diva Queen. I got the part and replaced her. And it was Diva Queen of the Bagram Empire. And I did the voice of Kate Mulgrew as this character for the most part. So it was really fun. And that's when I knew. I was like, ooh, I love voiceover. This is really good. And I started doing lots of, you know, sort of commercial voiceover auditions. And that didn't really pan out either. But the anime kept building more and more and more. And I got cast in the show Fushigi Yugi. I played Noriko. And then... So I've been working a couple of years with this production, still doing some on-camera stuff, and I really hated it. And my last audition was for this jerk of a celebrity who sort of looked me up and down and gave me this look of disgust, and I was like, okay, I'm done with this. I know I'm supposed to be here, but I'm not supposed to be doing this. So any sign you can give me would be great. And 2 days later, I got the call saying we have this show and we need a director because we've got too many shows and too few directors. And I got an MFA in acting, and I'd done some stage directing, so they said, do you want to direct the show? And I was like, sure, what is it? I'd love to. I mean, I'm scared to death, but I'd love to try. And, it was Cowboy Bebop, and that was it. The minute I started directing, it was like being shot out of a cannon. It just never stopped, and not really happened. So, which it could at any moment, so I'm really thankful for the work that I get to do. I'm really lucky. I've been on some shows that are so long running. I don't know how to say that because I'm not stupid. But I mean, Digimon was like we did 125 episodes of that, and then Naruto. I've been directing for 6 years. I mean, I've directed 325 episodes of Naruto. It's insane. It's insane. I came in episode 20, I think, and we're on episode 355 now. So it's... And I've been doing a lot of other directing in between, and my boss at Studiopolis, Jamie Simone, is so wonderful and loyal to me, and he lets me direct, you know, Sam Jackson, William Shatner, and then I'll do a little bit of Bleach, and he always keeps me really busy, and I've done some original animation for PBS and a couple of other networks, thanks to him, so I'm really indebted to him. He's a terrific director. So we get to co-direct Iron Man and Wolverine for Madhouse and Marvel, which was really fun.
What was it like to get the 2007 America Anime Award for Best Female Actress as well as a major?
It was awesome. I wish I was there to pick it up. Yuri Lowenthal went bounding up on stage to pick it up, and he lugged this heavy thing back, which was really cool. I knew I was nominated, and I was really hoped I was going to win, and we didn't get sent there. Like, Bondi didn't send us. Like, oh, you should have been there. You should have sent us. So I got the call because I knew it was that night, and we're sitting watching, my husband and I were sitting watching some show, and I got a text from, I think, Troy Baker. Ha ha! You won! Ha ha! And then Sister Nicholas texted me, and I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. And Darren's like, why didn't we go? And I'm like, I didn't know. I had no idea. So. And they never had another one. It was like a one. And I beat Miley Flanagan, which is great, because my trophy could kick the shit out of her Emmy. She'd get an Emmy. Who cares? Yeah, I was up against Miley for Naruto, and I beat her. So, ha ha, Miley. I give her grief about that all the time.
Well, post that to her page.
Miley's one of my favorite people on the planet. So, she and I met, it was like instant broad convention, like rah 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 rah. It was just a love fest from day one. I finally saw amazingly talented and funny human being.
So, what was your favorite episode of Cowboy Bebop to direct?
I think it was Toys in the Attic, because it was like directing 2001 and Alien combined. It was just the four of them, which I loved. So it was a really intimate, and it was just silly about this lobster that had been left in the fridge for too long that comes to life and kills everybody, you know? I mean, it was like Ed's monologue at the end, and they all died. It was a short series, but oh well, and they all chime in going, hey, that series isn't over, whatever. But it was really fun. It was a fun, I loved that episode. And I loved the Jupiter Jazz episodes, parts one and two. And Mushroom Samba was like brilliant. It was an homage to blaxploitation, and it was just brilliant. I don't know who was smoking what when they did that episode, but I still to this day have never seen anything like it. Spike walking up the staircase and the frog talking to him. And it was pretty amazing. So yeah, there's so many good episodes in that series. I'm hard pressed to name any that I didn't like.
Probably Pierre LeFou, that one. That one's kind of a little... No?
Are you kidding? I wrote the line at the last line. I hate theme parks because I've been working at one for so long and I don't hate theme parks. I love theme parks, but my husband hates theme parks. So it was sort of an homage to my husband. So, and the music in that, fantastic. Fantastic. That sort of terrifying carnival music. I loved Pure. I thought it was terrifying at the beginning. It was really scary. Not to mention the Foley in that episode of just the billiard scene, the very opening shot when Spike's playing pool. The Foley is brilliant. I mean, it's just so simple and beautifully done. I've never worked on a show that had equal parts storytelling through animation, music, and dialogue. It was just, and not all at once, all the time. A lot of anime is wall to wall, talking, ba 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 ba, fight. This has so much breathing room in it, and storytelling with no dialogue, just through music sometimes, or just through images. I mean, I think it's a work of art, I really do. It was our job not to screw it up, and I hope it works.
Alright, your resume is huge, completely huge.
All fake. I didn't do any of it.
But was there ever a time where you were doing, you know, several different shows at one time? and maybe, you know, you accidentally voiced another character from another show onto a totally different show? Were there ever, like, little mistakes or anything?
Well, no, because at least for the anime, I mean, it's, you know that visually they all look so different. And to be honest, if you listen to Erd and Helba and Motoko, they're all kind of similar, just because I don't have a lot of range. sometimes I would realize, like, when I was doing Motoko, I was like, oh, I'm sounding too much like Helba, I need to get back. And it was more of a, I'm losing the character than it was. If I just done Helba, I'm like, oh, I gotta get out of Helba mode mentally and get back into Motoko, you know. So, yeah. But it's really more directing. I do that all the time, because I'm directing 4 and 5 projects at once, you know, and one day it's Afro Samurai, and there's Sam Jackson, the next day you're doing Blue Dragon and Bleach and Naruto, and then the original show that we did for PBS, so sometimes I get a little
mixed up
with my, so I usually end up just saying, okay, so you've just killed Steve Bloom, and, you know, I go for actor names more than character names, because it actually gives the actors more reference to play off of.
This one, I've asked everybody else on this one, so I'm going to ask you on it.
Sure.
It's a little heavy, but it's okay. Sure. Tomorrow is September 11th, the 10th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. Any thoughts, and do you remember where you were when it happened?
I was fast asleep in L.A., and the phone rang, and I thought, I just was laying there, and I could hear the phone ringing about 6 a.m., and I thought my grandmother had died. I don't know why. And I just kind of went back to bed, and then the phone rang almost immediately, and I picked up the phone, and it was my twin sister, and we're very, you know, precarious, you know, together, and sort of, and she was just dead calm and said, turn on the TV. And I remember turning it on and looking at the towers on fire, and I just said, I don't understand. What am I looking at? She said, they were hit, and I don't understand. Hit by what? Planes. I thought it was like a little Cessna. You know, I had no idea. And then they showed the footage of that second plane coming in. It's just devastating. It's devastating. I grew up in New Jersey, and on a clear day, you could see them building towers. You know, for years, you could watch them building these unbelievable towers. And we lost 2 of our classmates from high school. Best friend's brother was working for Goldman Sachs, and he just happened to be late that day, and the guy I went to the prom with, one of my best friends, was downtown, and I didn't hear from him for days, and we just didn't know who was alive and who wasn't, and when they fell, it's stuff that would make you crazy. You just think of all the people that were in there, or the people on the plane that actually were brave enough to take a food cart and open the door and crash a plane to save lives. I just, it's mind-boggling to me, and it changed everything. We've never been the same since then, so it's a day of reflection, it's a day of mourning the loss of these people and not forgetting, you know, and I just remember, I still have in my computer the emails that went around that day of people, you know, love of sending out, you know, messages to each other, finding out that people were still alive, finding out that people didn't make it. Messages from all over the world. There were slideshows. Somebody put a slideshow together of all the memorials, the flower memorials from all over the world. Thank you. And it was such a time of love, like this global love that I never felt since then. And it was just like, for the first time, the entire planet came together and realized, this has got to stop, and it hasn't stopped. And not to be cynical about it, but it's just like, what was done as a result of that is a whole other story. We went to war in Iraq, and like, it was like, I was reading Michael Moore had an interview today, how he became the most hated man in America after winning the Oscar and getting out there and saying, shame on you, George Bush, because we got into this war. It was like he took, and that administration took, this unbelievable amount of global unity and used it to get into Iraq when we shouldn't have been there. So it's it was, it's, I don't know, it's going to be a hard day tomorrow, I think. It's going to be a hard one for a lot of people. But part of me wishes they'd just build the towers again. Just like, fuck you, you know, put them back up. Try it again, boys, you know, I mean, that's one thing, like, I really agree with Donald Trump, is like, just build them up again, but the reflecting pools are beautiful, and I'm really glad they decided to do that, to leave that as sort of a permanent memorial to these people who lost their lives. I don't know if you guys have seen the documentary that these two French brothers did. It's the only footage of the first plane going into the first, to the tower.
I have that one.
I do, too. I used to watch it every year, and I'm going to watch it tomorrow, of footage of them actually being in the tower when you could hear the people jumping. I mean, what would have to go through your mind to try and get out of there? They didn't even jump. So a lot of people need to be remembered and praised and honored for the sacrifices that they made, willingly or not. You know, those firemen going in and the policemen. It's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing. It's first responders, everybody, how everybody just came together. It was just like, I try and hold on to that, like that moment of everyone just coming together to try and save other people. A good friend of ours, Sam Riegel, and his wife, Brienne, were living down by World Trade Center, and they took some photography. They're actually in a documentary about people's, you know, just non-professional photographers taking pictures, and so it's going to be a pretty overwhelming day for some of these students.
Give us a good question.
What's your favorite color?
Yes.
Okay. You've done work as a voice actor for both anime and in video games. Do you see, you know, a difference in going into these two worlds, in anime and video games?
There's a lot more yelling in video games. Man, I just finished this one game, and it was over 13,000 lines of about 90% of it screaming. Screaming in a really bad English accent. And man, and it just trashed. It just trashes your voice. And anime is usually a little bit more plot-driven, character-driven. You get a great game every now and then that's really character-driven and stuff, but for the most part, it's a lot of screaming, and it really takes a toll on you after a while. I don't care how good a
voiceover. I would imagine, like, maybe 20 bottles right next to you.
Yeah, and, you know, you just try and get the technique down, because there's a really good way to scream, but it doesn't matter how good your technique is. After a while, your voice is done, you know. I know great actors that just won't do games anymore, because it kills them. And if you do that on a Monday, you're out of work for the week, you know, you need a week to recover, it's that bad, so, they're fun to do, without a doubt, but it can be really taxing on the voice.
Another little side question, about this, did you ever get to try the demo for the game, or do they, like, send you a free copy, or give you a special discount since your voice is in it, or?
Yeah, sometimes we'll, like the Naruto games, because it's really good about getting us the Naruto games, and the series too, which is nice after it's done, you get a box set every now and then, which is great. But I don't have, I'm really not a gamer, to be honest. I like the Wii Fit, although it does guilt me every time I haven't been on it for a while. It's really sad that they you're guilting me! Don't guilt me! I'm here when I can be. So, yeah, I played some Harry Potter games and stuff, but I'm just not a huge gamer.
Okay, this one's a bit more of a positive question. Actually, I guess we're actually a bit out of time. Thank you for doing the interview with us.
Oh, thank you. I'm so sorry.
Oh, no problem. Oh, it's no problem.
Yeah.
This has been Philip Wesley with Radio DMG and
ERG Productions with Little Local
and Golf Bum
with ERG Productions and
Mary Elizabeth McGlynn.
And thank you for listening.
Thank you.
And thank you for the interview.
My pleasure. Thanks, you guys.
This is Tommy Yoon speaking to you from a mile in the sky from Radio DMG.
And welcome back to Radio DMG. I'm your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, and I'm over here at NondesCon 2011 with...
Tommy Yoon.
Steve Yoon.
And they're representatives for Harmony Gold, right?
That's correct.
And they're like, okay, can you tell us a little bit, our studio audience, what it is you actually do for Harmony Gold? Or, yeah, what do you do at Harmony Gold?
I'm Tommy Yoon. I'm the creative director at Harmony Gold USA. Harmony Gold is a distributor of television and home video entertainment. And one of our high-profile titles is Robotech. And I do a wide range of creative work on this animated series.
And I'm Steve Yoon. I handle new media for Robotech, which means mostly running the website, but also handling new media projects like internet marketing, and we've also been working on a new restoration of the soundtrack from 24-track elements, and you know, any other odd jobs that come up.
Mm. So Robotech has a pretty kind of storied history. Would you like to explain to our audience what Robotech is? Just in case they're too young to know what it is, and shame on them if they don't. So,
Robotech is a 85-episode epic animated series, which include, as its name implies, a high-tech transformable mecha in which advanced military vehicles piloted by a large group of heroes transforms into robotic mecha. And this is a series that debuted on television in 1985 and has been popular to this day and has been a big hit on home video as well.
Now, how did you guys get started with Harmony Gold?
Me, myself, I started around 2001. I had completed work on a number of Speed Racer comic books. These were produced by Tatsunoko Productions, and I was a big fan of that Japanese production studio. And the company I was working for, DC Comics, was curious if there was another follow-up project to Speed Racer I was curious on working on, what would it be next? And I really wanted to work on Robotech, which was another series which was produced by Tatsunoko at the same Japanese animation studio. And hence, through a long convoluted path, I got in touch with Harmony Gold and ended up actually working for Harmony Gold.
Mm-hmm. And me, I was working at another animation company, but I got burned out there working 80 to 100 hour days. I mean, not days, but weeks. But after a particularly bad month, I decided to quit and go back to school and finish. And my degree was in creative writing, but I was also spending a lot of time teaching myself the internet and web design. And so when it turned out Harmony Gold was planning on doing a relaunch of Robotech around 2000, they had paid a company to help them design a website, but and they were throwing a lot of money at it, but weren't really sure what to do with it. So, as it turns out, I was a big fan of Robotech, and you know, had been studying web design, and so got in touch with Harmony Gold and gave them a lot of direction. And as a fan, I was able to kind of mold the website so that it was more of a fan site instead of just being, you know, corporate. So. And since then, my creative writing degree also came into use because when they started new projects, I was able to help write and edit some of the stories.
What animation company did you work for before working with Harmony Gold?
I'd rather not name them.
Oh, it's okay.
Yeah, it was just because, you know, working for 6 months at 80-hour weeks, and then 90-hour weeks, and 100-hour weeks, on a fixed salary, no overtime. Yeah, on a really bad project, and you know, after it was all done, my boss asked me, "Hey, Steve, we can either give you a raise, or we can start paying our interns, who've been working for free." So I told him to start paying the interns, and then I quit. So, I think I'll just keep their name quiet.
No problem. So, how did you guys first get introduced to Robotech? Like, when did you first see it?
We actually moved to California, and I remember we lived in Kansas because my dad was in the defense industry, and then we moved to California, and I remember thinking, I'm leaving behind all these great friends, you know. I was in fourth grade and I had a girlfriend and I was never going to see her again. And I was like moping and depressed about it. But I turned on the TV, and back in Kansas, all we had was cartoons on the weekends. But here in California, oh wow, they have cartoons every single afternoon. And then, you know, so I was starting to settle into California thinking, oh, maybe California's not so bad. And then Robotech came on, and I completely forgot about Kansas and all my friends there.
Did you forget about your girlfriend, too?
Oh, yeah. So I was like, oh, man, I'm so glad we moved to L.A.
You dumped her for Minmay.
Hey, a lot of kids did back in fourth grade.
Actually, I first saw Robotech backwards. This was in... the late spring of 85. I was just catching the tail end of the very first broadcast of Robotech. And so I started watching from the new generation. And so I kept hearing about this legendary Admiral Hunter who was going to return and fix everything. And the main character that I saw was awaiting the return of Admiral Hunter was Scott Bernard. And it built up to such a huge climax, and I had such huge expectations. When Expeditionary Force came back and Admiral Hunter went missing, I had such hyped expectations that, you know, after the 85th, the final episode, I was waiting for the 86th episode, and then all of a sudden it went into reruns, and it went back to the first episode. And I thought, hey, this is kind of interesting. Now I get to see Rick Hunter as a little kid, the person that they kept talking about. And then I watched the whole series again, and I enjoyed the other series. I enjoyed watching it from the start. Except because I saw The New Generation first, the very end of Robotech, it made a big impression on me. Just the order of how you see things shapes how you see things in your mind. And when the rerun was completed after the 85th episode, I thought, okay, by now they finished this 86th episode, right? I couldn't wait to see this new episode. Nothing. And then I just started to try to figure out what was going on. I started going to comic shops, looking for Robotech comics, trying to look for industry newsletters, trying to find out more about this Robotech series, because... what was interesting about it was many shows, such as the Hanna-Barbera cartoons, were written very individually. This what you typically saw on Saturday mornings. And so they could be programmed out of order. It didn't matter which order you saw them in. You could see them in random order. And each one was a self-contained story. Robotech had a very linear storyline, which was not very common for television until, like, Lost recently became a huge hit. All of a sudden, you know, linear storytelling in television is now vogue again. But here was a show back in 85, a cartoon no less, that did something that not many other cartoons did at all. And it made the universe feel so big, huge, deep. And then I found out that there was another series in the works called The Sentinels. And I was looking very much forward to that. And then The Sentinels was canceled, and all that came out was a 70-odd-minute direct-to-video of an unfinished series. And in a way, it was kind of crushing. You know, you wanted the story to continue, and there was, and then after that, there was silence. The Robotech franchise went silent for much of the 90s. There were some licenses, some obscure black-and-white comics, but there was nowhere near the high profile that Robotech had during the 80s. And this was something that always was in the back of my mind, you know, because I enjoyed the series very much. During that time, I was working in the video game industry. I'd worked in comics. and I had built up a great deal of experience in production, especially in the early use of digital video. You know, how video games, as DVD-ROMs started to take hold, video games started adopting digital video into the video games, which, you know, sometimes rivals the work of direct-to-video, you know, home video movies. And that gave me a big foundation of experience. And then later on, when I found out that the Speed Racer was being done as a comic again, and I felt that the comics of Speed Racer up until that time were very lackluster, I felt like I wanted to get involved, and that kind of helped relaunch the Speed Racer Enterprise, the merchandising of the Speed Racer franchise. And then I wanted to kind of apply that same experience back to Robotech, because Robotech had been very quiet for until that time. And in 2000, I had found out that there was a project called Robotech 3000, and this was being debuted at San Diego Comic-Con. And I thought, this is kind of interesting. I hadn't heard anything about this, but, you know, I want to find out more. And when it was shown, it looked like Reboot, if you are familiar with the very early CG series. Yeah, it was, the technology was a little bit ahead of Reboot, though, you know, to be fair. But it was not quite where Starship Troopers Roughnecks was. So this was very, very early CG. And for the time, it was competently done. But when the fans saw it, they just had a coronary, because they were affixed to the look of anime. And so I just kind of got involved. I contacted the company and came aboard. And the thought was, let's just kind of go back to old school Robotech, relaunch it from there, go back to the old school look, and see where it goes from there. And when we did the first follow-up production for Robotech in many, many years, which was Robotech The Shadow Chronicles, we started to adopt the combination of CG and cell-shaded animation techniques. However, by this point, a few years had passed, and the CG technology had matured to the point where the compositing of the CG and the cell-animated characters could be a little more seamless than before. It wasn't perfect, because technology continues to improve more and more over the years, but that brought Robotech back onto the market in home video in terms of new productions. And the classic box sets, as well as the new release of Robotech The Shadow Chronicles, have been huge, huge hits in home video and have helped drive a lot of new merchandising. And so that's kind of where we are now. We're working on additional Robotech projects as an outgrowth from that point.
I have a question about, like, I've got the Robotech Protoculture Collection. That's the remastered ones where they edited back in scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Did you work on the re-editing of that?
Actually, early on, we just gave suggestions. This was the staff at Harmony Gold. We gave suggestions into, what kind of scenes might be good. We kind of just gave out a broad plan, which was look for scenes in which they didn't have the ability to bring back all the various different actors, because not all the actors could be tracked down at that point. Mm-hmm. And so the solution was to take scenes that were edited for violence or nudity reasons. And right now, of course, if you look at the anime industry today, standards from 1985 are not what they are today. And so what was not necessarily acceptable for home video back in the 80s, you know, was perfectly fine today, as long as it, you know, was properly labeled so that the audiences were aware of what the content contained. And so a lot of scenes were added back in. The only scenes that weren't put back in were scenes for which dialogue was not recorded. But other than that, you know, certain deleted scenes, such as the mysterious bullet holes in the Roy Fokker's back, you know. Oops, spoiler alert. When something bad happened to him, we're added back to the series. And however, this was all carried out by executive producer Amit Agrama. Amit Agrama was the executive producer of the original series, and he got together with Intersound, which was the original post-production studio. And their sound engineers, under Amit Agrama's direction, they put together this remastered version of Robotech. Mm.
So, working on the website, where do you want to take the website in the future for to make it even more accessible to fans? What do you have in store for the fans on the site?
Well, we notice people spend a lot more time on Facebook these days. It's kind of turning into like a second internet where people, you know, get their news and their trends from their friends. And so what we've done is we've created a Facebook page for Robotech, and so we post all our Robotech news there as well. And, sometimes it feels like we get more exposure there than we do on the regular internet. We also have a Twitter site, or Twitter account, so Robotech News on Twitter, and on Facebook it's Robotech.
So, what do you guys have in the future? Wait, actually, this question... what has production and working at Harmony Gold been like after the death of Carl Masyk?
It's been a lot more work than expected. One of the things that people don't realize is that Harmony Gold is a relatively modest-sized company. There are some people who look at Harmony Gold as the man, is this giant corporation that tries to have its fingers into everything, when in fact it's a fairly close-knit group of folks, and with Robotech, we always could use help in terms of doing more work. This is why we're always grateful to fans who chip in and help out. And with Carl Masyk, one of the things we did was when Carl left ADB, because ADB had fallen on hard times in recent years, Carl hence had left AD Vision and moved from Texas back to Los Angeles. And the first thing that came to my mind was, let's get him back involved in Robotech, because now he was back within proximity of Harmony Gold. And we were talking with him, and we were getting him involved back into Robotech projects. And for me, being a new father, this was a big, huge sigh of relief, because we could split a lot of the workload in terms of creative work on Robotech with Carl. Unfortunately, since he had passed away, it has been a lot more work for me, and I'm very grateful to a very supporting wife and beautiful daughter. But one of the things we've been focused on as of the last year is completing all these projects that Carl had started. That has really been our priority. There has been the documentary, which Carl wanted to document the history, the folklore of how Robotech came together. That was very important for us to complete. The soundtrack as well. When we were doing a new anniversary soundtrack, we were actually looking to Carl for a direction to kind of figure out how to put some of these new tracks that we were gathering together, and as well our new production that we're producing for home video. I wanted him involved in that, but we're doing the best we can. We're trying to essentially gather up all the notes and thoughts and directions that we had from Carl and try to be as close to his vision as possible.
And before we go, anything you guys want to plug real quick?
We had just touched on to ADV having fallen onto hard times. They've been really good to us in terms of bringing the classic Robotech series into the forefront of home video. They produced a great DVD legacy set a long time ago, which had all 85 episodes in one nice big set of a series of boxes with 450 minutes worth of extras.
On 7 discs.
Yeah, on 7 discs. However, now, since the ADB company is no longer with us, the rights have moved on to A&E Entertainment. A&E being, yes, that A&E, the big, huge company you see on TV. A&E Television has picked up the rights to Robotech. And their home video group is releasing a giant box set which contains all 85 episodes, more extras than before, some never seen before, over 10 hours of extras. And this entire box set is going to have an MSRP of only $99. And so this is going to be the most affordable way to get the entire Robotech series for fans now. As a matter of fact, you know, I can safely say if fans just Google online e-tailers, they'll find out, of course, who sells at MSRP. They're going to find it very heavily discounted, and so they're going to find it very easily at a very good, affordable price.
And they should buy it. Don't download Robotech illegally.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're very sensitive to students. I mean, there are students who are attending college, and, you know, money is hard to come by mm-hmm. when you're studying and don't have a job. If you want to be, if you want to find an inexpensive way to watch Robotech that still is legal and still brings some revenue back to the voice or the people who produced it and everyone, and royalties and so forth, so that everybody involved gets their, you know, share, is watch it on YouTube or Hulu, our official licensees, and you can watch it for free with commercial advertising.
Mm-hmm. And anything from you?
And we also have the 25th anniversary soundtrack that's coming. It's going to have a lot of music that we thought was lost, but we found over a dozen new tracks that will be on the soundtrack. All our previous soundtracks were two CDs, and now this one will be three CDs because of all the new music we found. We've also done a lot of digital remastering on the songs, including some where we added a third verse that we thought was missing, and so there will be a longer mix of some of the songs. Mm-hmm. So, coming out this fall.
So, look for it. And thank you so much for your interview. This has been Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth with Radio DMG, and my guests have been
Tommy Yoon
and Steve Yoon.
And thank you.
And that's how the interviews went down. My name is Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth. You're listening to Radio DMG for December 5th, 2011. My apologies again for the quality of the audio. Listening back through it again, I realized, yeah, it was also because the door was open and you can hear some of the traffic below. But hey, good interview though, and I hope that you enjoyed our interviews, and I hope you enjoyed our coverage in OnDeskCon 2011. We were a little bit late getting it out the gate, but that's due to technical issues and laptop things and such. But that was the last of our non-Descon audio for non-Descon 2011. Next Radio DMG will have something else, some more stuff, and it should be quite interesting. I hope you look forward to our next episode. Please subscribe to us on our probably working iTunes link. I don't know, sometimes it's a little iffy. Check out our RSS feed, that's the easiest way. Actually, it's better if you use the RSS feed than it is if you use iTunes. Also, follow us on Twitter. Click that link on our page for it. Like us on Facebook. Subscribe to us on Area DMG. That's our YouTube. Subscribe to us or friend us on Flickr. And bookmark us on RadioDMG.com and DMGIce.com. Also, check out AnimationIsArt.com. We'll be revamping that very shortly, with more details as new details become available. Until then, thank you for spending some time with us here at Radio DMG, and good night.
I'm just aiming at her. Every time we do the interval, we just...
And say something real quick. Just anything.
Something real quick. Ryoko's a bomb, that is all.
Okay.
We're going to say... okay, I'm recording right now. We're going to say things... say something, sir.
Yay. Hi, my name... I like pie.
Okay. I'm just talking here, and go ahead and talk real quick. Just say something.
The quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog.
Okay, let's see how... Okay, we're doing another test to see how this cleans up the sound. Nothing from you? Okay.
Someday over the rainbow. Oh man, that sucked.